and welcome to Too Many RPGs, a show about RPG shows. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Ethan. This is a show where we talk to creators and fans of actual play podcasts and streams about why they enjoy them. It's been a while since we've talked about D&D.
It has.
Lauren.
Yes.
What is your favorite D&D class?
Oh, gosh. That's hard. So, I think Ranger.
Bard! Bard! I love bards.
Bards are really good. Bards are really, really good, but they're a little bit too magic-y for me.
Okay.
And I really like rogues too, when I want to go like zero magic.
Mm-hmm.
Because rogues can do some really cool things like without magic. Yes. I almost never play Arcane Trickster. But like Ranger and Paladin too, but I'm not as much of a Paladin person. Like, they're just like a really good mix of having just enough magic to make things interesting, but like also being really cool combat focused.
Do the fight good?
Yeah, like they do the fight good, but they do it like in a really interesting way. Like, I think Rangers are a really good example of like being really good at one thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they've really got that, like the Ranger is a highly specialized class even before you take in like a subclass specialization.
Right.
And they're almost always useful.
See, I like the bard because they are always useful.
Bards are very good. Bards are like probably a little bit overpowered, and I do love playing bards.
They have good skills. They have the ability to help other people. I don't care too much about their spell part. Like, the spell part of bards is like, I'm like, meh. I like the skill, lots of skills, all the skills.
Yeah, you get a lot of skills.
And
you get a lot of skills.
Bardic Inspiration.
And Valor Bard.
I love Valor Bard.
Bardic Inspiration is very good, but Valor Bard is a great example of like a bard that is really good at doing the fight.
Almost exclusively play Valor Bard.
Valor Bards are so good.
Let me punch things and then tell you how I punched you.
And also like that inspiration adding to like
AC damage.
Your AC is so clutch.
It's very good.
I have saved many a party's life. there's just so much you can do with the different classes in D&D, and I think I'm drawn to, you know, like Rogue, Ranger, and Bard specifically because they're so, like, they're definitely your more utility-based classes, right?
Mm-hmm. Give me skill proficiencies. That's what I want.
Give me all of the skill proficiencies. Make me, like, necessary for things. I like being useful. And it's like, if you are going through a dungeon and you don't have a rogue, you're immediately on edge. But if you have a rogue, you can be like, okay, this is my thing. This is what I'm going to do. I've got you. And I like playing those kind of characters. Now you don't have a good segue.
I don't have a good segue, but you know what? Let's just bring our guest in anyway.
This week we have Corinne talking to us about Magic Folk. Hello, Corinne.
Hi, my name's Corinne. I'm the DM of Magic Folk, and it's great to be here.
Hello.
Magic Folk. I know it just recently got featured on Geek and Sundry, which is really exciting.
Yes.
But it's such a tiny little thing. I want more. Tell me more.
Yeah, it is. It really is a tiny little quip, and I was kind of surprised. I guess that it was like a list of three shows, two of which were podcasts and one was like a stream, but we were featured. The whole team was very excited about that and kind of geeking out, and we've seen a little bit of a boost of our listenership. That's like kind of been a little bit of a big deal for us. It's not like we're like blown up. We still don't have that many listeners, but we are a 5e podcast. It's like vanilla 5e, but like very extra vanilla.
You can put extra vanilla into vanilla, right? Like you have like super vanilla bean vanilla.
Right. So that's the real debate there. Is vanilla like the absence? It's definitely actual vanilla is definitely not the absence of flavor, but
no.
We use a very simplified version of the rules, and part of this is because I don't know the rules of D&D that well, but part of it is also our playstyle, and that we are very, very much towards the role-playing side of things. It's just how we like to play, and there's nothing wrong with playing a really crunchy mechanical game, but we, over time, have even drifted more and more towards the role-playing side of things as opposed to the mechanical side of things. So some episodes will roll like two dice in the entire episode. So that's what I mean when I say hyper vanilla, is that it's like very, very base game. We play kind of fast and loose with the rules and don't play. We oftentimes don't deploy rules when we don't really think they're necessary for what we're going for.
Very cool. So you're more focused on like on the story and how people get there than like, you know, roll me a constitution saving throw and I swing the monster for 59 damage and stuff.
We definitely do use, like, we use saving throws, and we, in fact, I'd say that's mostly what we roll is, like, ability checks and saving throws. We don't do combat all that often, I would say, and there are definitely entire episodes without combat, but as far as, like, the very in-depth rules, you know, you can get, like, hyper-focused on the mechanics of D&D, and we don't really tend to do that, and I think there are kind of opportunities too with what we're doing, but it's just not our playstyle, right?
Yeah, that's totally valid. I mean, I love me some hyper-focused D&D.
You're talking to like two min-maxers here.
It's... Uh-huh. But I mean, also, we are very happy to just throw everything out.
It's true.
I'm like a huge fan of like the Soulsborne series, like the Soulsborne franchise. And so I could totally get with a game that was like hyper crunchy and hyper grindy and very mechanical, but just this specific group is not how we do it. But yeah, there's no shame in either direction that you play in. Just as, I guess, to sort of describe the show to the audience, it's very, very, very role play heavy, very character driven and social interaction driven.
That's really cool. So tell us about this party. They had a great name, the Rowdy Party, the Rowdy Bunch.
Yeah, it's kind of... It's the Rowdy Party.
Okay.
It's a little tongue-in-cheek, in my opinion. Like, I don't know if the others see it that way, but I use it kind of tongue-in-cheek in this way that it's, like, so generic. Like, any four D&D player characters could be the Rowdy Party because, like, if you don't play D&D rowdy, like, kind of chaotic, I guess there should be... There doesn't have to be. Don't get me wrong. I love a good lawful character, but there's oftentimes a lot of chaos in D&D, and so it's kind of a name that you could give to any party, I guess is what I'm getting at.
Yeah, totally. Most D&D adventuring parties are, like, huge disaster crews, so...
Rowdy Party is quintessential, like, capital D&D.
Yeah absolutely.
Like, good old-fashioned D&D shenanigans.
Yeah, so that's why it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, is that it's like, it is quintessential D&D, and I recognize that it's not saying anything necessarily unique about the party, but we are, the player characters are a human bard named Burnin Ledsetter, and we kind of homebrewed in an accordion that he invented, so there is no accordion as an instrument in the magic folk world. It's like a new thing that he just calls the Ledsetter, which of course is his last name, and he's kind of this nerdy, anxious, like fantasy southern boy.
I love him.
He I do too. We do the Burnin voice like way too much when we're not recording. It's like we'll just break into, oh no, oh here I am. But he's like very, very awkward and also very like romantically inclined. So like he,
oh gosh,
kind of
so much.
Lord, you can't afford to adopt any more sons.
No. He's my son.
No.
So he like reads romance novels in the story and stuff, and there's a whole thread of like, I don't know. I guess I should say Magic Folk is an adult show. I don't know if this show is adult, so I don't want to go into too much detail there, but it's like a lot sometimes, and it's very fun, but it can be a lot with Burnin. We also have a Aarakocra barbarian named Kiss Redkill, and he's kind of boisterous and kind of talks like this, and he's played by Kyle Bruning. I should say Burnin Ledsetter is played by Victoria Watkins, who also makes the art for the show under the brand name Star Party, and Kyle does some of the music for the show as well, so we're all kind of working together collaboratively and creatively. But Kiss is kind of this hyper-confident... You could say that he has short man syndrome. I don't know if Kyle would agree with that. I would say that Kiss maybe has short man syndrome, because he's always boastful about his skills, and he has this long string of, like, titles of things that he's done. Like, I'm Kiss, Shark Climber, Bird... Shark Climber, God Slayer, Hero Barbarian... Child Saver. It's like this big string of things that he introduces himself with. And Kiss is like very naive in a lot of ways as well, because Aarakocra age more slowly than other people, I guess, in Magic Folk at least. I don't know if that's true for D&D.
So, okay.
Do it.
I don't understand that mechanic in any D&D thing. Like, why... why do elves live 100 and, like, that, it doesn't, that's not how brains work. Like, like, if you had someone who lived 150 years and was immature that entire time, you know how good a 10-year-old is at absorbing knowledge?
Right.
You would be that your entire life. As an elf, you would be a genius.
Right.
By the time you got to adulthood, and you would know everything.
So, as I come in here to rules lawyer, the official D&D rules, specifically with elves, it's not so much their development cycle has slowed, although that is a popular, you know, interpretation that lots of people can do kind of like in their life or whatever. But it's like they age normally up to like human 20, and then it just like slows down. But culturally, they're not considered adults until like 100.
That's still super weird.
It's very weird. But like, it's not just like, it's like if you are, you know, a 20-year-old elf and you know as much as a 20-year-old human and you're, you know, a human, be like, yeah, I'm an adult, I know things. The elves would be like, oh no, you have like 80 more years of learning to do before you can do stuff.
That doesn't make...
The issue then is, then why are all 100-year-old elves level one?
Yeah! Like, there's so many weird things about it. And like, because it's not just that, it's everyone lives longer than humans. But humans are always, like, 20-year-old human is going to be level one, along with, you know, the 300-year-old dwarf, the 100-year-old elf, the 30-year-old halfling. Like,
they get less done in that 100 years and 30 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just like that super extended adolescence that, I mean, many people would argue that we have in human life now, is that like, your adolescence extends into like your undergraduate college years. And like,
it kind of begs the question, like, if human life expectancy went up to like 500 years, would we be kids for like the first 100? Like, would our culture change that much? I don't know. Probably not. But
if the life expectancy went up to 500, would our bodies like still age? Because we would just like, I can't even imagine what a 500-year-old person.
There's a really good description in one of the Gulliver's Travels tales, because he goes to an island where people don't die, but they still age. And there's the scene, and it's burned into my brain, of just this human-shaped bag of bones sitting in a chair.
Oh, I love that.
No muscle left, just skin and bones.
That's... no.
And he can't move. Good. And barely talks. It's awful.
I mean, if I were that old, I'd probably be doing the same thing, to be fair.
Yeah. It's like that dog in the Odyssey that, like, waits 20 years.
That's a good dog, though.
That is a good dog.
That is a very good dog. But, like, yeah. But the just the way they describe that dog as just being, like, just nothing. Just, like...
yeah,
a sack of bones and skin, essentially.
See, poor thing. See, I see. I think about a human like that, and I don't get sad. But then the dog's all old, and it's like, oh man.
Dogs are better than most people. So
yeah,
we were talking about bird.
But we were talking about bird people. So
birdbarians, rather.
Birdbarians. Yeah, birdbarians. And I actually think I said it backwards. Kiss ages more quickly. Like, Eric Hooker have, like, a 30-year life expectancy, I think. Mm. So Kiss is 4 years old, but is an adult Eric Hooker. And it's kind of a running joke that, like, you're only four, you can't do this. He's, like, a baby. But he's a crowd favorite, I think. Like, just the sort of impulsiveness and naivety, but also charisma. He's a very charismatic barbarian, not very, like, he can be hyper-violent, but he's not violent for the sake of violence. Mm-hmm. He's violent for the sake of his name, kind of. And then we have Syndra, who is a druid, a human druid, and Syndra is, like, kind of subtly, I don't want to pick favorites, because it's like, I can't tell my players which who's my favorite, but I love Syndra. In, he's kind of this, like, again, tongue-in-cheek critique of, like, the sort of traditional hero's tale in this way. He's from what's called the North in the magic folk world, which is sort of the fantasy equivalent of, like, Norway. And he speaks with, like, a bit of a accent because common wasn't his first language. He speaks Northern and is just kind of sarcastic, but also very... Syndra cares a whole lot about other people and is always checking in on Burnin, for example, to make sure that Burnin's okay, but also can't really manage his shit sometimes. So he has these amazing moments that where he really shines throughout the podcast, but is kind of like subtly there. He's not super Flanderized, I guess is the point. Like, I don't even know how I would Flanderize Syndra in this way that I could easily Flanderize Kiss into this like boisterous barbarian boy. But yeah, so those are our player characters, and I play a bunch of NPCs, of course, because I'm the DM.
How many seasons have you been going on? Do you seasons?
So we don't do seasons. I'm editing the 45th episode right now, and they're each about an hour long, give or take 15 minutes. Whatever comes after Magic Folk, I think, will be like Magic Folk season 2, kind of. So I don't want to give too much away, but we kind of have some stuff planned for what happens when we wrap up this arc. I think there's probably another 20 or 30 episodes left of what we're doing right now before we move on to quote unquote season 2. It'll kind of be a different show. It won't be the same story necessarily, but
it's the spinoff.
Exactly. Yeah. Definitely set in the same universe, maybe in a different time with different characters, but we have arcs that are kind of like little mini seasons. And I actually at some point should like plot out the arcs based on which episodes are in which arc in my mind for people to make it a little easier to consume. But yeah, so we're 45 episodes in. We've been going for a bit over a year now.
Awesome. What's the like condensed story of the rowdy party? Where do we meet them in session one, and what have they been doing for the last 45 episodes?
Sure. So we meet the rowdy party. Okay, so I should say for the audience, and this is covered in episode 0, is that we started with another cast member who left the show around episode 22. But I'm also very satisfied with Claire. Claire's a dragonborn wizard, and Claire's arc is also very like tightly wrapped up with the bow. It was an awesome way for a cast member to leave. It wasn't just sort of like, okay, Claire's not here anymore.
Oops.
Now I'm doing that voice. No, I'm really satisfied with how closed that arc. But we meet three of the rowdy party on the way to a cave called Yardsard Cave. That is, I don't know if y'all have seen this meme where people write like yard sale on their sign and fuck it up, so they say Yardsard. Mm-hmm. But that's what the cave is named after. So it's kind of this goofy thing that is a bit referential, and there's a lot of stuff like that in the show that's sort of referential to culture at large. Or like, we've had people say that we reference meme culture a lot, or like internet culture, which is true to an extent. But they're on the way to a cave to get some loot, and they meet Kiss in the cave, who promptly attacks them and like throws an axe at them, and they gain Kiss's trust, and then they are swiftly sort of spirited away into a hell dimension for the first 3 episodes.
That seems rude.
Yeah, it's a bit rude of me, huh?
I mean, yeah. Welcome to Dungeons and Dragons. Here's hell.
Yeah. So part of the reason I had to do this is because, so like, don't get me wrong, I'm really happy with it, but this started as a narrative device because we started playing D&D before we started recording it, and Victoria, who plays Burnin, was the DM, and we played like 2 sessions and then kind of fell off. And I was sort of driving one day on this road trip and had this imagery in my head. And that's how I write, is like, I get these images that are sort of grandiose and surreal, and I then sort of write between these image points, these pieces of imagery that I see. And I had a couple images in my head while I was on some road trip at one point. And I remember I couldn't write them down because I was driving, and I was like, I gotta remember this. And so I went over it a bunch in my head, and I took up the mantle of DM and sort of rebooted this session with the 3 characters we had established, plus Kyle joined as Kiss. So it was kind of like, again, this tongue-in-cheek, like, there's no real reason they're together. Like, they were together because they were together in the last 2 sessions that we played, and then Kiss just kind of shows up in the cave, which does get explained later, but it was a way of me saying, like, we're gonna kind of wipe the slate clean. We're not in Ribbonton, which is the town that they were in before. Now we're in hell, and everything is chaos, and there's no way to orient yourself. And that's kind of been the trajectory of the story since then. There's this, like, running thread of nobody has any real reason to be there other than their inertia and their own personal shit. Nobody's really the true hero here. Kiss might think of himself as a hero, but they're sort of just caught up in this larger thing going on.
So they're just kind of like they're just kind of, you know, it's like monster of the, not the system monster of the week, but like the idea of like monster of the week adventurers. There's no like you're saving the world hero plotline.
There is, but I keep using this, but again, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek in this way that it's more about the characters, and we actually get peeks into the king and the paladin who sets them off on this journey, Gomek, who was actually my player character in the first campaign that we played, sort of discussing the fact that they don't think that this is a good idea, and like Burnin especially is hyper reluctant to be there, and he tries to kind of quit the adventure several times but is sort of roped back in by his friends, his party mates, who eventually kind of become his friends. They are kind of saving the world, but they are not the quintessential D&D party where it's a bunch of important high-level heroes who have these destinies. And Burnin has some kind of destiny. I'll give that much away. And that much is clear of sort of where we are in the podcast. There's some kind of fated thing going on, but it isn't. It's more selfish than that, I should say, without giving too much away.
So what you're telling me is that they're adventurers,
quote unquote. Yeah, like scare quotes adventurers. Like they're adventurers by accident, and because there's a knight telling, or like the head of the Knight's Guard is telling them what to do, and they sort of keep accidentally falling into what we call collapsed realms, that are sort of these pieces of space that have been collapsed sort of beneath the base realm that exists in Magic Folk.
Okay.
And sort of their journey sort of does shape up to kind of have more purpose, but by and large, they're sort of just being told what to do and dealing with their own personal stuff. And I'm sort of realizing as I'm talking about this that it's like, it's hard for me to convey the whole of the story of Magic Folk. And we have this problem, and we're actually like commissioning somebody to write an elevator pitch for us because we have no idea how to pitch the show to people. It's just like everything that we try and say, you could say that about every single other D&D podcast and every single area that we shine in. Either it feels like it's bragging or putting other people down if we include this stuff, or it's like just too generic. And I think that a huge portion of this is the fact that it's largely character driven, and the way that the players, I'm so proud of my players and the way that they embody their characters and their own sort of dramas and traumas and anxieties and interpersonal things and issues with their families. It's far more about the characters than it is about this story that I'm telling in the background that our characters just kind of happen to be a small part of.
I kind of like that there is this like great overarching plot line, like stuff's going on, the world's ending, the world's being saved, but like you don't really care about that with this. It's kind of like, you know, like cop shows, but you know how cop shows are mostly about detectives?
Right. No, I know exactly what you're talking about.
Because detectives are the ones who like look for things. It's like, it's not about the beat cops who are just like, they're doing most of the work, and then the detectives show up for like 5 minutes and are like, oh yes, this happened. So I imagine it to be like somebody else is figuring out how everything connects. These adventurers are just the ones that are like, yeah, go out there, get the clues, and then somebody else can figure it out while you deal with your personal things. Which I kind of like as like an entertainment concept.
It's character drama between minor bouts of adventure.
Yeah, and it's the adventure, or I guess I should say like the end of the world plot that I have going on is the framework for which we can tell the individual stories. Like if there wasn't this end of the world thing, you know, quote unquote end of the world thing, it's more like a big bad evil doing bad stuff in the background. But this, if it wasn't for this framework, it's almost like an ends justify the means, right? Like I need a way to get Burnin, Kiss, and Syndra together so that they can find each other and develop as characters. And I've figured out a way to do that. But again, and don't get me wrong, the larger end of the world plot, big bad plot, has a lot of deeper meaning to me. It's highly personal to me in these ways, and it's highly symbolic, but that's only a portion of the show, and such a large portion goes to the players' characterizations of their characters and the ways that they embody them in roleplay and this self-discovery aspect. So, yeah.
I think that's really cool, because oftentimes you talk about, like, you know, when people talk about what makes a good GM and what makes a bad GM and all of this stuff, and sometimes you meet GMs who you feel like they're really better off just like writing a book.
Mm-hmm.
because they have this like big plot story that they want to tell, and then the players get in their way. Where like you have managed to have this big story kind of going on in the background and it's important to you and you're having a really good time with it, but like if the players are just like, no, we want to just, you know, go off and do something completely different that does not help the overarching plot line, it's okay. It doesn't like mess up the entire session.
Right. And there are like these little arcs that have nothing to do with the big bad, or have very little to do with the big bad, I should say. Like they are kind of tangentially related. But I actually heard that very early into Magic Folk, was somebody said something about how it was like one of those like, what's your D&D hot take thing? And it was somebody was saying that D&D is about the DM's story and the players are kind of inconsequential and you can plug in any player into that. And I really didn't want... Yeah, it was a bad take. Yeah, it's like, who wants to play that game, right? Like, I get that to some extent for like pre-written modules, your stuff has to be able to handle whatever character like the players make. But the story that I want to tell is very catered to their experience and what they want to explore. And I think that's a big, like, such a huge part of Magic Folk is self-exploration, not just for the characters, but for the players too. And for me, like, I came out as non-binary during Magic Folk, and I by and large learned and accepted that I'm non-binary during Magic Folk, and the exploration of gender that I was able to do and, you know, via role-playing figure myself out was, I mean, it's just monumental. And I actually don't know if I ever would have figured this out, or I maybe would have figured it out much later had it not been for the show. And there's a lot of that going on with the other players that is their personal like stuff. Like I don't want to talk about it for them. Not that it's never talked about, and like Kyle in particular has like mentioned some stuff about his arc and Kiss's arc semi-publicly, or on these like we do these meta discussions about the show every so often where we kind of talk about what's happening. I think for that reason it just feels very, very important, and I want to tell a story that facilitates that, not just for me but for everybody at the table. And I want everyone to recognize that they are telling the story just as much as I am. That's very important to me, and so I think that actually seeing that bad take from a year and a half ago was just huge. Like it very well may have changed the trajectory of Magic Folk in this way that I've focused on that since then. I didn't want to be that DM, right?
Yeah. I really love the way that roleplay can help you figure out that kind of stuff in like, I don't know, like you hear very similar stories about people's exploration with gender, people's exploration with sexuality. Like it's such a wonderful safe space for that, because you're not being yourself. You're being, you know, you can be another character, you can be another person who acts a different way, like acts very completely different from you, but you're still embodying that performance in role play, you know? So I know for me personally, like I've played characters who are very different from my personalities, and it's helped me kind of figure out, oh no, this is not like, it's not that I'm just not in, you know, that I'm just like, for example, like non-violence or like wanting to like deal with things through speaking first. It's not just that I like would prefer to do that, or it's not that I just like don't like combat. It's like there is a thing inside of me that needs to deal with things, you know, in a collaborative, peaceful way, and not in a, either if it's like physical or emotionally violent way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think like, I mean, that's really awesome that you were able to like figure out this huge important thing about yourself, you know, because you got to play D&D. And like, that's, I don't know, like we talk about it a lot in the role-playing community, but like also I don't think we like always give it the weight that it deserves.
Yeah, I agree. It's interesting how different people explore their identity in this way too, but I'm like totally a proponent of D&D for trans people and the fact that if you're at a safe table and you have a group that facilitates it, you can really explore yourself in a safe way that you otherwise can't, because you have to be birth stealth, or you have to be not out, or you don't know. And like that was by and large the case for me. If I'm being honest, I knew, but I was in denial by and large. But I agree that like we talk about it as this tool, but there's, I guess it was kind of hard for me to wrap my head around the fact that it might have been years. It, who knows? It could have been years. Like before I figured this stuff out. And it's really like, I'm also a huge proponent of like intimacy and vulnerability at the table. And they're like, I've had these moments of kind of like people who have sort of, I don't want to get on too much of a tangent here and like get kind of negative, but people who've kind of wanted to or like overstepped bounds trying to get into the game and like wanting to play Magic Folk and assuming that me talking about my D&D game means they're invited to the table. And it's like, I don't want to be gatekeepy in that in this way either, but Magic Folk is like hyper intimate, and I'll play a different game of D&D with you, but I can't, I'm putting myself at risk, but also all the players at risk, because we're so vulnerable. And I think that that's like, I think that's a big deal. And I guess my point that I'm trying to make is that some people haven't respected boundaries in that way either. And I wish that people would give it more weight in consideration of the fact that like we can play D&D just for fun. And I've done that. And I love doing that. Like I played Monster of the Week with Tess from RPG Casts and Palomi for Palomi's show Ironhides, and it was just like a blast, and I didn't really know either of them. Like I knew Tess kind of, but I didn't know Palomi, and it was fun. And like I've had other D&D games like that, but there are certain places in which I want people to respect sort of the weight of a role-playing game and the fact that role-playing is like a thing that can affect us deeply in this way, right?
People talk about like safety tools and how to like encourage player safety, but like I think one of the things that, because they're, it's hard because there's not a tool for it, so we don't talk about it in our safety tools discussion, is that like mm-hmm. there are just certain tables that you can deal with that, you know, that you feel comfortable exploring certain things with, and other tables that you don't. Mm-hmm. And so it sounds like Magic Folk has become this really kind of like safe space for you and your players to like work through some important things that wouldn't necessarily work for a bunch of, you know, for other tables or other people in the table.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it comes through in the show. I think there's probably more going on in the background than maybe the audience may listen, but there are also subtexts that you can pick up on if you're paying attention, especially for me, especially for what I'm saying with the story and the overarching plot, and also these smaller sort of, you know, so the collapsed drums are, you know, for in the episodes in which the players go into collapsed drums, those are kind of the arcs. It's like the hell arc or the farm arc with Cannon and Pace, where they're on this rural farm, or the Quekia arc where they're back in Kiss's hometown. It's so these little micro spaces in which there are stories of their own going on, and I really try and inject every single NPC with, like, I've said before, every NPC in Magic Folk is like a self-insert for me. Like, every single one I relate to in some kind of way on this deeper level. And that there's a lot of subtext there, I guess I want to say. Like, I don't want to go into too much. And we do cut out some stuff specifically discussing that subtext in editing, just because it's like, it doesn't, number one, it doesn't make for a good show, but also sometimes it's deeply personal. So, yeah.
I have a quick question.
Sure.
And not to derail from all the very serious talk.
No, yeah.
But why is a farm so important that it gets its own demi-realm? Like,
yeah, I was going to say, that was my next question. Like, please tell me about the farm demi-realm, the farm demi-plane.
Well,
is it just Stardew Valley?
So the answer here is, the reason it's so important is farm lesbians. like... So they are, it's a two women who, one of which they meet on the way into the city, and the other which they meet when they accidentally go into this collapsed realm, and the arc there, you know, spoiler alert, first arc of Magic Folk or second arc of Magic Folk, the arc for them has a lot to do with them reuniting, but also there's this character who is kind of like a found grandma in this way, who's there at the farm also. So the sort of more mechanical narrative explanation is that the big bad is at that point very early into their plot, and this is like, so, okay, so if Tori, Becca, and Kyle listen to this, they don't know this, but this location in particular was important. It needed to become a collapsed realm to achieve what the big bad is and was trying to do.
Oh my gosh, are you telling us like big important show breaking secrets on a
yeah, like that's big. That I have not disclosed that to anyone, so that's a little,
you heard it here first,
snippet. You heard it here first. I'm gonna link Becca and Kyle and Tori to this.
Oh, wow. Juicy. Okay. That sounds great. I love everything about I love the idea of a super important farm.
Yeah, it's, and I don't know that I went into as much, I went off on a tangent. The two people on the farm are based on real people that are very important to us. And so it was a way to sort of facilitate these early NPCs that could emotionally affect the players, I should say. But also, like, it reminds me of Steven Universe with Lapis and... Well, so spoilers, Steven Universe, Lapis and Peridot. They're so fucking cute. And that's pacing canon right there, really.
You're talking about how it's very difficult for you to explain why this show is so important. And I think that's because, from what I'm hearing, it's just it's incredibly important to all of you at that table. It's a very important table, it's a very important space, and it almost sounds like it sounds like it would be a very good example to go look at and see about cultivating your own, almost. is that correct in saying, like, would you say that this, like, if people were listening to the show, do you think that they would have more ideas on how to sort of cultivate that space? Or
I hope so.
Okay.
I think it does depend on what kind of game you want to run, but really you can take sort of like the founding principles of Magic Folk and apply them to any game, I would hope. There's a lot of goofs too. Like, don't get me wrong, we laugh a whole lot in every single episode, and that's like a big thing about who we're commissioning to write our pitch, is we have a very similar sense of humor, and we want them to be able to capture the sense of humor of the show and sort of the comedic aspect. But it is like, I hope that people can look at Magic Folk and say, like, I want to run a table like Corinne does, and I want my players to interact with each other and respect each other and sort of have these deeper interactions with each other and with the NPCs like Magic Folk does. I hope so. I don't know that I can, you know, confirm or deny. I think that's up to the individual. And I think a big part of this too is that it's what everybody at the table wants. Like, mm-hmm. I'm not forcing the other players to interact in this way or to interact with my NPCs in this way, and I'm not like heavy-handed, like, you know, just like destroying the narrative with all of this personal shit that they don't want to get into. So it's very much this like group decision to do the show in this way, and if that's what everyone wants, then I hope that people can look at Magic Folk as an example of that.
I don't think you could do what you're doing if everyone wasn't bought into it.
Right.
I'm just thinking, like, as you're telling me about this game and how important and personal it is to you, it really feels kind of like a gift that you're sharing it with us as a podcast.
Aww.
Because it's so important to you, you know? And it sounds like it's really important to your players too. And so being that vulnerable for four or five people, like, that's one thing. But then being like, okay, we're going to be vulnerable for each other, but then we're going to take all of this footage of us being really vulnerable and give it to the internet, which is not always nice to vulnerable people.
Yeah.
And so I think it's really wonderful and brave that you're that's such a gift.
Thank you. It's funny when you say it like that. Like, yeah, maybe it's,
Well, it sounds like you do a lot of editing and stuff to make sure that, like, you're protecting the most vulnerable part of yourselves.
Yeah, we definitely keep each other safe, and there is, like, I think that, you know, we could have the meanest person talk about Magic Folk and try and really cut into us with all the personal shit that we get into on Magic Folk, but there's a big difference between that person tweeting at me and that person being at my table. And I think that's, like, you know, after the fact, the stuff that Magic Folk gets into, that's who I am as a person and that's who we are as people. And when I walk outside, if I'm like birth stealth and I'm not presenting in the way that I want to, that I'm still that person inside, and Magic Folk is kind of like that, in that, like, there's nothing anybody can really do because it's just who I am. And I, you know, I want to exist in a radical way. I want to put myself out there when I can, when it's not sort of threatening my livelihood or threatening my safety in a larger way or in a more material way. I want to put myself out there, and I want there to be queer shows, and I want there to be shows that explore neurodivergence, and that's important to me. And I think that what we get out of putting Magic Folk out there, and, you know, I said at the beginning, like, we don't have that many listeners. We really don't. We're a very small show, but the people who are into it have expressed to us that they're like really into it and they get very excited about it and very touched. And it's very important to me that we've touched those people in that way. And it's worth any kind of hate that I could get for anything that I disclose. Maybe I need to talk to the other players and make sure it's worth it for them. But I think that it is. Like,
I mean, it sounds like it if you've been going on for 45 episodes.
Yeah.
They would have let you know.
Right. Right. And we've had check-in moments where it's like, hey, is this, you know, I know that this is super personal for you. Is this too heavy? And it's, you know, we've modified course to account for that, and or we've continued on and done it, you know, when whoever it's affecting has wanted to.
You mentioned having these kind of like meta discussions. Is that something you do on the podcast or is that something you do kind of around the table with just yourselves?
So we do both. We talk about the show a whole lot, back channeling and like individually, one-on-one in a meta way. And we have a group chat that we talk about it in, but we also have meta discussions that we record and edit and publish, where the first one I talked one-on-one with each of the players sort of about the arcs thus far of the player characters. And then we released a second one a little while ago now where it was a round table and we were all talking about things. And so we get into sort of our intentions and the subtext a little bit more and how we're personally affected. We also don't get, like, we don't disclose too much, but I think that's where one of the players mentioned something specifically about how that was like really a very important moment to them because of their personal life. And it's where I've mentioned stuff like that too, just sort of not even disclosing what it is, but disclosing that it's there.
Mm-hmm.
And so we've put out two of those so far. It's interesting how we kind of think about these meta episodes in a meta way where like we edit them too, right? So it's like we want to be a little bit meta here, but we don't want to get too meta that we're giving too much away. But yeah, so we had one technically episode like 41 or 42. So this was maybe 5 episodes ago. So pretty recent if anybody in the audience wants to sort of get a gauge of where we are. They do contain spoilers, I'll say.
All right. I think it's time for the question.
The final question.
Oh no.
Do-do-do. So fill in the blank. If you like blank, you'll like magic folk.
So I think that the big thing is if you like Taz, if you like the Adventure Zone, you'll like magic folk. And we actually, Gavin, who is the pod reporter on Twitter, actually wrote an article about us when we first started, when we were like 4 episodes in, about how at first, and this is like, Gavin's our friend, like Tori is a co-host on one of Gavin's podcasts. So I'm kind of like tongue-in-cheek subtweeting at Gavin right now. But Gavin was, I guess, back channel mean about us saying this is a Taz ripoff at first, and then kind of changed his tune and actually wrote an article about the difference between, you know, imitation and inspiration. And that was like super touching. But we've been compared a lot to Taz before, and I think that Griffin's like method of storytelling is very innovative. There was nothing big like that in tabletop RPG podcasts when it was done. This sort of looseness with the rules and this flippancy and this blend of drama and jokes. And so they're a huge inspiration for us, I'll say.
Awesome. I mean, hey, that balance arc is really important to a lot of people. So
yeah, absolutely.
Like, there's nothing wrong with, you know, being compared to like, hey, because this podcast is an important thing to not as many people as you know, the Adventure Zone, but because none of us are McElroys, but like,
right.
You know, it sounds very important. It's very important to you and it's very important to your listeners. So
yeah. Yeah. It's not a bad thing. I'm mostly teasing Gavin really. And like, kind of poking fun at that. And I've been told I sound a little like Griffin before, which I'm like, okay, whatever. Like, Griffin did help me accept my cackle, I'll say that, but that is my natural laugh. I'm not trying to emulate Griffin McElroy, people. But yeah, we're totally like cool with it, and it is a very flattering comparison. And we'll say stuff on the show like, well, Griffin McElroy is not on this podcast, or like, I will specifically say, like, you've solved my blank puzzle as a joke because of that comparison, and sort of as this self-aware, like, yeah, we're like the Adventure Zone, we get it. But it is, you're right, it is a flattering comparison to a show that means a lot to a lot of people, including everyone on our cast.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and talking to us about, like, yeah, this thing that sounds so personal and important to you and the other players. And I had a really great time listening, hearing you talk about it, and I had like, I don't know, I feel like this was really nice. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure. And like, I love that you give people this space to just geek out about their own things, because I think that a lot of the time people are kind of self-conscious about being self-promo-y or talking too highly of themselves. But we all love our own creative projects. And I think it's really amazing that you're doing that for people. So thank you.
If people want to join the growing fan club of Magic Folk, how do they do that?
So you can follow Magic Folk on Twitter and Instagram at Magic Folk Pod, and we have a website, magicfolkpod.com. You can find us on basically any podcatcher. You can follow me personally at GG Gomek, and Gomek's that paladin I mentioned earlier who's a self-insert, wink, wink, at GG Gomek on Twitter. And yeah, I hope that you enjoy the show if you choose to listen, audience.
Thank you to Corinne and the cast of Magic Folk for sharing such a personal campaign with us, Jeff for writing the music with me, and you, the audience, for listening. It really means a lot to us.
If you'd like to be on the show or have a creator in mind we should contact for future episodes, you can tweet us at TopiaRPGs, or you can contact Lauren at JL_NiceGirl,
or Ethan at SuperRobotBear. If you liked this episode, please leave us a review on your favorite podcatcher and recommend us to your friends. It really helps us spread the show to new people.
Because this is too many RPGs, you've been listening to it. You continue to listen to it, and you're going to continue listening to it until I continue talking, or you turn off too many RPGs, which will happen first. I can keep talking for a really long time. It's a gift. I was used to do it a lot during sound checks, and...
Okay, sure, yeah.
That fades out.
I assumed. It was either that or you're waiting for me to stop you.
I mean, that was also an option.